From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Brady Carlson in for Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Each weekday morning, New Hampshire's population gets smaller as more than 100,000 Granite Staters head to work across the border. That number has been growing in the past decades. That might not be a surprise if you've ever headed south on Interstate 93 or I-95, but you might be surprised by some of the implications of that mass morning exodus, effects that go well beyond heavy traffic or higher road and infrastructure costs. Those who commute out of state pay hundreds of millions of income taxes to Massachusetts, Vermont, and Maine. There are questions related to housing costs and work-life balance, and what it might say about a state and its economy when so many people seek and find work outside of its borders. Today on The Exchange, New Hampshire's mass migration. And let's hear from you. What are the effects of your commute, either inside New Hampshire or to a neighboring state? What benefits or drawbacks do you see from all of this movement? What more would you like to learn? Call in The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can email your questions and comments, exchange@nhpr.org, or share your thoughts on Facebook or Twitter. We have a panel of experts here with us for the hour. Dennis DeLay is an economist at New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies and forecast manager for New Hampshire at the New England Economic Partnership. Good to have you, Dennis.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Carrie Deers is here, executive director of the Nashua Regional Planning Commission, which serves 13 communities in southern New Hampshire. Great to have you as well, Carrie.
Thanks, Brady.
And joining us by phone is Alan Pizarski, an independent researcher and analyst of travel behavior. He's authored the Commuting in America series since the 1980s. Alan, great to have you as well.
Great to be here.
Well, let's start with that national picture, Alan, which you've been looking at over the years. What does the typical American commute look like according to the data here in 2014?
Well, it's been a little, I guess, drab is the right word. I don't think anything to excite reporters. We've kind of had, you could almost call it a lost decade. In the year 2000, the average travel time in the United States to work was 25.5 minutes. And in 2011, it was 25.5 minutes. Literally, almost zero change. It tipped up to 25.7, if you can get excited about that, in 2012. So it's been very stable in that regard. And we have to recognize that when you don't add a lot of jobs, you don't add a lot of travel time. It's just that simple.
And so that was going to be my next question about that. We've seen a massive economic change with the Great Recession. What effects, if any, have we seen related to that?
Well, I think a big part of what we've seen is declining carpooling, which has been kind of a surprise to me. And I think to other people, you'd think that when jobs were tough and times were tough, people would be getting together in carpools and trying to save some money. But what happens is carpools tend to be oriented to factory work, tend to be oriented to construction work, and those are the two things that really died during the recession and have been very slow in coming back. So and of course, if you're in a carpool with one other fellow and he loses his job, well, now you're a single occupant vehicle driver. So all of those things have conduced to sharp declines in carpooling, which I think is really quite unfortunate.
Dennis, I was surprised when I was looking at the numbers, seeing just how many people, maybe I shouldn't have been surprised because I have driven south on I-93 from time to time into Massachusetts, but the sheer number of people who leave the state during the day and then come back at night, not to mention the hundreds of thousands who are commuting within New Hampshire.
Right. Different parts of the New Hampshire have different commuting patterns overall. About half of the workforce in Hillsborough County and Rockingham County are working at jobs outside of the county that they're in, and that probably is most likely jobs in Massachusetts or jobs in Maine. Now, the total amount of income taxes paid by New Hampshire residents to the state of Massachusetts is about $270 million a year. And if you divide that by the Massachusetts income tax rate, which is 5.25%, that means that New Hampshire residents are pulling in about $5.5 billion a year from jobs that they work at in Massachusetts. If you look at New Hampshire compared to other states in the country, we rank second in the percentage of income that we're getting in from other states around us. Maryland is first, and you know it's probably easy to think about people that live in Maryland probably are working at jobs in Northern Virginia and in Washington, D.C. But New Hampshire ranks second at about 12.5% of our income or wages comes in from jobs that are worked at in other states other than New Hampshire.
And the comparable piece here in northern New England is that New Hampshire is close to these other states, whereas a place like Texas is large enough where you might have people commuting longer, but they stay within those borders.
Yeah, again, California would be another example. Some of the states that rank towards the bottom in that places like Wyoming, which is a very big state, you know, essentially if you're living in Wyoming, you're probably working at a job in Wyoming.
I don't expect a lot of interstate commuters, say, in Alaska or something like that. But still, even knowing that, Kerry, there are still plenty of issues. And that's certainly true in the case of the communities that you serve, because you're seeing a lot of those commuters. They live in southern New Hampshire. They go across the border for work. They come back at the end of the day.
That's right. Yes. In the Nashville region, about 25% of workers commute to the Boston area. And, you know, that you talk about being on I-93. We're on the turnpike, and that sees a lot of traffic heading down to Massachusetts. And so people we have heard from want options, because really there's just one way there. And so, you know, the Boston Express does a fantastic job. The park and ride at exit 8 is completely full every morning. I mean, it's people are seeking ways to get there that, you know, they don't have to drive alone. You know, talk about ride share not being very popular, but there are definitely incentives in the Boston area for employers to send up van pools and things like that to try to make it easier for workers to get to their jobs. So that's definitely something that impacts southern New Hampshire in particular.
And Alan, how does New Hampshire's experience stack up to these national averages and trends? You mentioned that as a whole, Americans are not big on carpooling, at least at this point.
It's quite interesting. The subject of the flows is immensely important, and most people, I think, in the country just simply don't recognize it. The long-term trend has been for people to leave their home county to work. We're up around 27-28% of the country where people leave their home county to work. Maryland was mentioned. Both Maryland and Virginia lead the country with almost half of the workers leaving their home county to work. And that's what you're seeing in New Hampshire. I think New Hampshire is up with certainly within the top 10 and probably within the top 5 in people leaving their home county. And then we could talk about leaving state. I think New Hampshire is certainly one of the highest. Maryland and New Jersey, because, again, of a major metropolitan area just over the border, have that same kind of attraction. I think one of the attributes you see in New Hampshire is something that you also see in a state like West Virginia. There are a lot of people who do work within the state who have very comfortable commutes. They're walking, they're taking a short driving trip, or not, they leave the state and then they have a very long trip. So you have a whole bunch of people with an under 20-minute trip and a whole bunch of people with an over 60-minute trip.
Is there a way to sort out what factors cause that? Is there an income difference between people who have a short commute versus a long one, or are there particular fields that individuals tend to have longer commutes than others?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is skills related. I think the whole country is moving in a direction of skills gaps and in the workforce, trying to replace the baby boomers as they phase out. And so skills mix is critical. And so you may have people in New Hampshire who have the kind of skills that's demanded back in Boston. They have other reasons maybe for being in New Hampshire. They like the lifestyle, maybe a tax situation, and they're willing to make those long-distance commutes in order to realize that kind of an opportunity.
Dennis, what have you found when it comes to who's commuting and what factors go into the length of that commute?
Well, I think, again, it's, as Alan was saying, it's related to the skill set that people have. I mean, I think it's broad-based, though. I mean, for New Hampshire, I think people who live in New Hampshire are commuting to jobs in the financial sector in Boston, to the medical services center sector, but also metropolitan areas like Boston have sort of changed their dynamic over the last couple of decades. You know, in the 1970s, Boston was emptying out, and a lot of those folks not only went to Metro West, you know, the Worcester County area, 128 area of Boston, but they also came to New Hampshire. So I think that's part, you know, I think now what we're seeing is people that perhaps are working in the construction industry probably find more opportunity in the greater Boston area than they might even find in New Hampshire. We know, too, that Boston and the Massachusetts generally has actually recovered from this recession quicker than New Hampshire has. Massachusetts has all of the jobs back that it lost in the Great Recession, about 3.5% more, as a matter of fact, right now. New Hampshire and Vermont are still struggling to get the same level of jobs that we had prior to the recession beginning. So economic opportunity means people are willing to travel to take advantage of that opportunity.
And sometimes, Carrie, they may be traveling to a different place depending on the economic circumstances of the particular year or the particular time.
Right. And I also wanted to bring in the housing affordability issue. You know, people often travel longer distances because they're finding, you know, their housing is more affordable farther out. And so when we look at that, you know, initially think, okay, you know, it's less expensive to live in a suburb farther out. But when you factor in transportation costs and the commuting costs, oftentimes you'll find that folks are spending, you know, 50% or more of their income on both combined housing and transportation. And so when you look at that, the cost of commuting actually, you know, may be higher than they originally thought.
They're looking to save money but end up offsetting
right.
those costs entirely.
Right.
Well, that's a good place to take a break, and we'll pick that back up after a short break to look more at some of these factors cost-wise that people have to consider as they look at their commutes. We'd also like to hear from you. The exchange phone number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us your thoughts by email, exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be back after a short break. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. This is The Exchange. I'm Brady Carlson. Today in The Exchange, a look at the impact of the commute. Thousands of Granite Staters make a commute every day. We're looking at the effect on commuters, on companies, on our infrastructure, and on our society. We hope you'll join us at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Send an email to exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page. There's been much discussion about adding more mass transit options for New Hampshire commuters. And joining us now to talk about one of those options is Ben Blunt. He's general manager of Boston Express, a bus company that offers commuter routes between New Hampshire and Boston. Welcome to The Exchange, Ben.
Good morning.
Well,
Thanks for having me.
What have the trends looked like for bus services like Boston Express? How many commuters are you seeing today?
All in, we have two service systems. One comes down out of Manchester, down Route 3 into Boston. The other comes down I-93. All in, we carry about 700 individuals that commute. So that adds up to about 1,400 rides, single-way rides in our system.
So that's pretty substantial, given if you are taking the bus system, then that's 700 cars that might not be driving to and from Boston
Precisely,
each day.
Precisely, yes. Yep.
And beyond just the number of commuters, how has the experience of bus commuting changed over the years?
I think we see people are more tied to their personal devices these days. I think personal freedom sort of used to be defined by having your own private automobile. I think that has changed, you know, as Wi-Fi becomes available on coaches. Folks are able to catch up on email on the coach, stay connected to their device, and that is certainly attractive to a lot of people. I think we've seen a lot more students using the service. In the recession, I think families were making the decision that maybe boarding wasn't the best use of their funds, so we actually do carry quite a few students in and out of the education system down in Boston as well.
So So then as the makeup of the ridership changes, then the accommodations have to change. I noticed that in the recent times that I've taken the bus that there are people on laptops, but they're also looking for those charging stations. They're looking for a place to plug in while they're on the bus, as well as the Wi-Fi internet service.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's a struggle for us to keep up with modern technology. I mean, it used to be TVs were what you had to have in the bus to keep people stimulated and occupied. That has changed. Everybody now has, you know, their devices with their own TVs in their laps. So that's less important. You know, what we find today is we get more complaints about the Wi-Fi not working perfectly than we do about AC. So wow. What's important to the commuter has I think, changed.
And how then does a company like yours make the financial numbers work? Because there's a cost with Wi-Fi service and there's a cost with accommodations that then has to be factored in, much less just the decision of whether or not to add another bus or add another route.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we recognize that in order to stay viable and in order to get people out of their cars, we need to offer those services. So obviously there's a cost, and we do our best to get the best for our dollar when making those decisions. But it's not really a decision. I think if you're going to be in public transportation, you have to have some of those basics. And I think the definition of basics has changed in the last 5 years.
One of the questions that we hear from people across the state is there are some mass transportation options for people, say, heading from Manchester or southern New Hampshire into Boston, but not necessarily as much for someone who may live in Claremont or want to commute up to Lebanon or Hanover.
Sure.
What kinds of questions do Granite Staters need to think about as they consider how to make those options available to people, or whether there are other options that we can consider?
Sure. Well, we partner with New Hampshire DOT on the Boston Express system, and from what I see, the state has done a pretty darn good job pushing folks to rideshare programs, positioning park and ride lots throughout the state that enable that to happen more easily. I think one thing to bear in mind is the cost of some of these systems. You need a pretty substantial customer base in order to make a service like ours, Boston Express, function. We run large 51-seat coaches that obviously are expensive to operate and expensive to buy in the first place. So it's not always a viable option in some of those smaller markets, but I think there are van programs that can be looked at, or rideshare programs. And, you know, the state, I think, is always assessing those needs from what I see.
So looking at a wider range of options is one question to look at going forward. What else are you going to be looking at? You've talked about how that ridership has changed in the last 5-10 years, but what other questions are you going to be looking at in the near to short-term future that you may need to consider going forward?
Sure. I think with us, it's just constantly keeping up with demand, and that's something that I think we're uniquely able to do. We're able to be responsive to fluctuations in our passengers. So if we see a single trip in the morning that is going out heavy consistently, we're able to plan accordingly and try to get extra buses in those spots. A schedule change when necessary is something that we're always looking at. So we're constantly keeping an eye on those things. So I guess that's the short answer. Just keeping up with demand for us.
All right. Well, Ben Blunt, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
That's Ben Blunt, General Manager of the bus company Boston Express, and we hope you'll join us as well with your thoughts and comments on New Hampshire's mass migration commuting in the Granite State at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Here with us for the hour is Alan Pizarski, an independent researcher and analyst of travel behavior. He's authored the Commuting in America series since the 1980s. Carrie Deers, executive director of the Nashua Regional Planning Commission, which serves 13 communities in southern New Hampshire. And Dennis DeLay, economist at New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies and forecast manager for New Hampshire at the New England Economic Partnership. Carrie, you mentioned earlier on in the program about the range of options that people consider in southern New Hampshire as they try to make commuting to Massachusetts work. And we heard from Ben that maybe we need to even consider a broader range, not simply saying bus service is an option, but a whole range of bus services.
Oh, sure. I think, well, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the rail, the commuter rail that the Nashua region definitely is supportive of and trying to support that expansion into New Hampshire. But when we look at the region, you know, we talk a lot about people going to Massachusetts, but 60% of the workers in the Nashua region live in the Nashua region. So there's a lot of opportunity to look at those short-term, short-range options. Yes, rideshare, but, you know, biking or walking. A lot of the population lives within a quarter mile of a town center, which has a lot of the jobs. So we're fortunate in southern New Hampshire that a lot of jobs exist in southern New Hampshire. So there's a lot more opportunity for that. The Nashua Transit System does a fantastic job of getting people around Nashua. We'd like to see that expanded out into the regions, up into Merrimack, where the outlets are, where there's a lot of jobs. You know, they're just people that we've talked to say, you know, we're not going to give up our car, but we'd like to have options that would be available. So we're definitely looking at all of the options. One of the things that we run into is obviously funding. You know, there's not a lot of funding for transit in New Hampshire to begin with. So that causes a barrier right there. So I think that's one of the things that, you know, that we hope that the policymakers and the legislature will look at as we're talking about these issues. We have a lot of congestion that's building up in southern New Hampshire. So, you know, where we're expanding I-93 or looking at expanding the turnpike on Route 3, those are limited solutions. And so when we look to the future, how are we going to accommodate all different options? And I think transit needs to be a part of the solution, which means finding a sustainable funding source for that.
Alan, looking nationally, how does New Hampshire's experience in an issue like buses, one form of mass transportation, compared to what you see in other places where you have that urban center and a number of areas where it may or may not be economically feasible to have a commuter service like the bus system?
It's very variable, but I think the key point is most of the big transit systems are very much center city oriented. They're basically radial systems, the spokes of the wheel. Much of our job distribution now is actually out in the suburbs rather than in the center, and in many cases highly dispersed. And so in order to get people to those kind of dispersed locations, you need to have smaller capabilities. By that I mean some of the van ideas that the gentleman from the bus company just spoke to, or bus operations, or ride sharing and carpooling. I think those are the big potential payoffs in your area.
Let's bring in some of our listeners. Bill is calling from Hanover. Hi, Bill. You're on the Exchange.
Good morning. I have given up on I-93 on weekday mornings. I don't drive to Boston every day, but when I do on weekday mornings, I have taken to driving down 89 and 93 to the north side of Manchester, then going over 101 to Exeter and taking the Amtrak down Easter train. It is such a pleasant contrast of the stress and frustration of these highways. It's perfectly beautiful. I get on the train, I have a cup of coffee and a little something, and relax, plenty of room to stretch out. I get to Boston, I'm good to go. There's just absolutely no stress. It's civilized. It's absolutely civilized. I tried taking the bus one afternoon when I had a medical appointment at the end of the day, 4 o'clock, and the bus got stuck in traffic at that time of day. I didn't think there'd be any traffic going into Boston at 3:30 in the afternoon, but we're an hour late and I missed my appointment. I had to go. I just had to return. I wasted the whole afternoon.
And meanwhile, then you've got the Downeaster service to take you back and forth if you need that as well. Thanks so much for the call, Bill. Dennis DeLay, here's a related comment from Philip on our Facebook page. He said an underappreciated value of long-distance public transit, particularly trains, is the ability to do productive tasks while in transit. Imagine instead of spending 3 hours a day in a car, you spent 3 hours paying bills, answering emails, researching parenting challenges, reading a new book. So much of humans' productive time is wasted in a car. So a couple of questions there. We've seen the ridership increasing over the years for the Downeaster service running mm-hmm. between Maine, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts. And then also this question of spending productive time when you're traveling rather than simply concentrating on getting where you need to go.
You know, I was going to say when Ben was talking about the Boston Express and the bus service, you know, I don't take that service much, but actually I'll be taking it again next month because we have an economic conference for the New England Economic Partnership coming up in the first week in October. So I'll probably be taking the Boston Express down to Boston from Manchester. And I agree with you. It's a very civilized way to travel. It's a lot better than, you know, trying to weave in and out of cars on I-93. I mean, Bill mentioned, you know, the train offers even more options and also the ability to maybe bypass the traffic that you see on I-93. If you look at the economic impact of expanding transportation infrastructure, it's usually very positive. A few years ago, a couple of decades ago now, there was train service extended from Boston down into the Providence, Rhode Island area. And I think it had most of the studies I've seen show that it had a significant economic boost to the Rhode Island economy, which, again, tends to not perform as well as Massachusetts and New Hampshire and even Vermont do. So there's a couple of reasons, I think, to consider that kind of mass transit. It's certainly safety and convenience, but it can play in the economic development plans for a locality as well. I think one of the issues that we have in New Hampshire and this is true for most of New England, but I think it's particularly true in New Hampshire, is our local planning process is very concentrated on at the city and town level. I mean, I know that, you know, Cary's Regional Planning Commission and the other regional planning commissions try to take a regional approach to things. But, you know, again, we're very parochial in the state, and we tend to think about how it only affects our city or our town. And so when you start talking about a new option that might be good for the region, it's difficult for us to, I think, as a especially when we're thinking about how it only affects one locality, it's difficult for us to get the energy behind those kinds of solutions.
Sometimes trying to get people on the same page from town to town, much less state to state.
You know, it's much easier to do that in places like the Southeast and the Pacific Northwest, which, you know, think about local government in terms of regions, counties, and that kind of thing. We tend to think about local government in terms of what's happening in our city or our town.
And, Cary, the other question that always comes up when you start talking about more rail service coming between New Hampshire and Massachusetts, and we're seeing this now, is that issue of cost, the idea of what it's going to take to put that service into place, where that money is going to come from.
That's a good question. right now, actually, the New Hampshire Department of Transportation has a consultant that's looking at those issues. And we're hoping the report will be out later this fall, earlier in the winter, to help us frame what it is, you know, to get a handle on what exactly is the cost and what are some options for funding it. And those are policy choices that I think we all need to look at.
Let's take another call from one of our listeners. Jim is calling from Peterborough. Hi, Jim. You're on The Exchange.
Thank you for taking my call. I have two concerns, 2 points I want to make. They deal with unintended consequences, which relates to community costs. When people work out of town 9 or 10 hours a day, they may not have the time or inclination to be involved in their community, and they may not feel connected. The unintended consequence is a decline in volunteering to serve on community committees or to hold public office. The second one, which is dear to my heart, I've been a volunteer firefighter in Peterborough for 50 years, and we're seeing not only nationwide but locally a serious decline in young men and women become volunteer firefighters. And, of course, there's a dozen factors as to why they're not joining, including some generational differences. However, the number one issue is that they're working out of town. And yesterday in the Peterborough Transcript Ledger, Chief Chamberlain came right out and is talking about it's a serious issue. And Jaffrey's a fairly good-sized town. Five people that are volunteer firefighters work in town All the others are commuting. This has very serious ramifications for our communities.
Big questions, and thank you so much for that call. I'll ask you, Alan, when there's an opportunity cost to start when you are spending time in your car or even on a train or a bus. That means that that's time that you're spent not doing something else.
Yes, I think that is a national question. You see it much more, for instance, in California, in the New York areas, where people are engaged in extraordinarily long, extreme commutes. It does have an impact on just going to a PTA meeting or any other volunteer activity within the community. People are just tend to be exhausted. I guess one of the positive things I would note is that what we're seeing nationwide is dramatic growth, and in New Hampshire, of people working at home, particularly as people get older and as the kind of skills and activities that people engage in change. We're seeing more and more people working at home. And if there's a boom in any quote-unquote mode of transportation, it's working at home. It's been really a dramatic increase across the country.
That telecommuting, and that's another piece that's worth bringing up. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll look at that question, and we'll take more calls and questions from our listeners. The exchange phone number, if you'd like to join us, is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. We'll have more after a short break. This is New Hampshire Public Radio. This is The Exchange. I'm Brady Carlson. Tomorrow on The Exchange, a look at the college campus sexual assault problem. You can join us with your thoughts in advance of that show by sending your comments to us, emailing exchange@nhpr.org, or find us on Twitter or Facebook. Today, we're looking at New Hampshire's mass migration. More than 80,000 Granite Staters travel to the Bay State for work. That's been cited as both an economic boon and a drawback for New Hampshire. There's pros and cons to those positions, but there are plenty of other impacts besides the economy and besides traffic. We hope you'll join us at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or exchange@nhpr.org. I'm in the studio with Dennis DeLay, economist at New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies and forecast manager for New Hampshire at the New England Economic Partnership, and Carrie Deer is executive director of the Nashua Regional Planning Commission, which serves 13 communities in southern New Hampshire. With us by phone is Alan Pizarski, an independent researcher and analyst of travel behavior. He's authored the Commuting in America series since the 1980s. Joining us now with another look at mass transit issues in New Hampshire is Ann Rugg, manager of Commute Smart Seacoast, a regional transportation management association, which is holding a PEAS B2B, business-to-business, commuter challenge next month. Ann, welcome to The Exchange.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you. This competition is aimed at developing the, quote is, the smartest and greenest commuting workforce. How does this work, first of all?
Well, it's any company at PEAS can enter it, and it's a way to encourage sustainable commuting with all of the workers and also the students who come down to PEAS every day, and to make it fun and exciting and give them incentives, kind of make it a thing.
So essentially giving everyone a chance to rethink how they commute and how they might commute in a different way?
Yes, and I've been going into all the businesses who are participating with information about how they can find a carpool partner or the bike routes or the bus routes to PEAS to give them the information that they need to consider an alternative commute.
Is that the primary issue that people find once they have the information that they can choose some of these options that may be a little greener or might make their commute a little shorter? Is information the key issue?
Well, I wish it was that easy. It's a challenge to change people's travel behavior. We are so set in our ways. We grab our keys. We don't even think about it. And to propose another option, you have to look at the individual. Everyone's different. What are the incentives? You know, what might work for me might not work for you. What are the barriers? So I have an individual conversation with the people who come to the table, and I sort of find out what's going on with them. Money is, and that's been mentioned on the show today, money's a big factor, and people can save literally thousands of dollars by carpooling or taking the bus.
But as you mentioned, it's not necessarily just an economic argument that people are having with themselves about how they commute. Sometimes it's psychological. They say, I might save myself some money carpool-wise, but that may make my commute more rigid. I may have to start coordinating with other people, or I simply don't want to have somebody else in my car sharing that time with me. There's a lot of questions that go into people as they make these decisions.
And we encourage people to try it even just a couple of days a week. It doesn't have to be every day. You don't have to leave your car at home and never use it again. And we also have the emergency ride home program that allows them to not be stuck at work if their carpool person has to leave early or they have to leave early. We will reimburse them for a taxi or a rental car so they won't be stuck at work if they have an emergency during that day.
So at the carpooling systems and rideshare programs are maturing in a way as you start to work through some of these logistical issues that commuters face.
Right. You have to think of all of the barriers and all of the incentives and work on both of the angles to make it viable for people. They're not going to do it if it doesn't make sense.
You talked about the conversations that you have with employees. What about the conversations that you have with employers about the incentives that they make? I mean, typically an employer might put up a facility, put in a giant parking lot and say, well, we've done our part. But that conversation, I might imagine, is changing, too.
It is. And I talked to some big employers in the Seacoast, and by creating carpools or even van pools, it allows them to recruit further afield from just the immediate Seacoast area. So that's a plus. They understand that happier employees are better employees. So if their employees are less stressed, that gentleman who said he was so stressed and frustrated with his commute to Boston, you know, you arrive to work and you're not exhausted or, you know, just your energy is gone. So they understand that there's an increase in morale by using a sustainable transportation mode.
Now, we mentioned that this B2B commuter challenge that's taking place next month at Pease's, this is the first annual event. What are you going to be doing beyond this event to try to ensure that an initial burst of enthusiasm where you see people trying ride sharing, trying carpooling, trying these different options doesn't necessarily then fade away in 6 months or a year?
No, I'll be going into the companies again and again. I just don't go in once a year and think I've done my job. I might have to go in once a month or, you know, once every couple of months and encourage people. And then hopefully the word of mouth, they try it and then they get their friends to do it and it has a positive snowballing effect. And hopefully we're going to try this at the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard again in the winter to try to encourage sustainable commuting over there.
Well, Ann, thanks so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much.
That's Ann Rugg, manager of Commute Smart Seacoast, a regional transportation management association, which is holding a Pease B2B Commuter Challenge next month. And we'll have information about that on the exchange page at nhpr.org. We hope you'll join us as well at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Let's hear from another of our listeners. Rami is calling from Nashua. You're on the exchange.
Hey, thanks for having me. I have a comment about the logistics thing, and I don't think we're going in the right direction. I mean, carpooling and buses can only go so far. My idea here is that we should try a different approach and that we should actually have something to start the businesses to come to New Hampshire. Why travel to Massachusetts all the time?
This is the big question we've heard, Dennis, from some of the candidates in this year's election season talking about. We need to attract more businesses onto this side of the border rather than sending our workers over to Massachusetts. How economically does this play out? Because there are people who say it's not necessarily a bad thing that we have New Hampshire workers in Massachusetts.
Well, I mean, I think on the positive side of the ledger, if somebody's living in New Hampshire and working in Massachusetts, chances are, especially because they're paying a 5.25% Massachusetts income tax, chances are they're working at a job that's paying them more than they could get if they had that job in New Hampshire. So there's an advantage, I think, personally. Economists believe that people, weigh all of the opportunity costs and try to figure out what's the best thing for them. And so you have to believe if there's 100,000 people, which works out to about 20% of the total New Hampshire labor force that are commuting to jobs in Massachusetts, that they're doing it for very good reason, that they, again, are making more there than they could at similar positions in New Hampshire. The other side of this, though, is that you have a synergy that happens sometimes as people move up in an organization, start thinking about, you know, starting their own companies. Sometimes they'll look at where they live as a place to locate a new firm. And we have seen over the last, even in the last year, several companies that, you know, in places like Chelmsford and you know, around the Boston area that have actually moved up to New Hampshire. We've had a couple of small software companies that have located their corporate headquarters in Hudson and places like Londonderry and even Nashua. The way it happens is it's sometimes difficult to see exactly how all this, you know, ties together. But you like to think that as people, as I said, move up in the careers that they have, they may be thinking of New Hampshire as an option to locate the new company that they're going to start.
Alan, you mentioned earlier on that a lot of the job growth that we've seen in recent years has been in suburbs rather than those urban centers. And so it could be that just as workers are mobile, that companies are becoming a little more mobile as well.
Oh, absolutely. Most jobs today are not tied to a harbor or a natural resource. And basically, employers want to be where the skilled workers are. And so I would not be surprised to see employment moving in the direction of Nashua in the Boston suburbs, and that would be something I think we will expect to see firms looking for skilled workers going to university towns, going to places wherever the skilled workers might like to be. If it's out on a mountaintop or on a seashore, wherever it is, that's where they're going to take their jobs.
Carrie.
And I agree. I think that's definitely what we're seeing. One of the things or the limitations, I think, to having an employee on a mountaintop is broadband access.
Yeah,
and I
right.
think that's a huge consideration for New Hampshire. You know, we do have a large portion of the state that's very well plugged in, but we have a lot of, even in the Nashua region, you know, the town of Mason on the western side has very spotty, if at all, very good broadband coverage. So I think, you know, beefing up that infrastructure is an important consideration to bring jobs to New Hampshire as well.
Even if you're telecommuting, there still needs to be an infrastructure to support that.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Let's hear from another listener. George is calling from Winchester. Hi, George. You're on the Exchange.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Go ahead.
I have two questions. I was wondering, one of them has to do with what you were actually just talking about while I was on hold. Was how many people are coming into the state to work? And also, I was wondering if a lot of these people who are traveling to Massachusetts from border cities like Nashua and Salem, how many of them actually moved up to New Hampshire and never held the job in New Hampshire to begin with?
Good questions.
The second one's a little hard to answer. I think we have seen over the last several decades probably 8,000 to 10,000 people a year moving into New Hampshire from Massachusetts. Now, that rate of in-migration from Massachusetts has slowed down considerably in the last 3 to 5 years. We're seeing very few people coming in to live in New Hampshire from the state of Massachusetts. As we've been saying, there's about 100,000 New Hampshire residents that commute to jobs in Massachusetts, but there's about 30 to 40,000 Massachusetts residents that commute to jobs in New Hampshire.
And some in Maine and Vermont as well.
Some in Maine and Vermont as well. So the borders are very porous, you know. I keep thinking of that scene in The Hunt for Red October when the two Russians are talking about whether they need papers to travel from one state to the other. And I say, no papers.
Thanks so much for your call, George. Mark is joining us now from New Boston. Hi, Mark. You're on the Exchange.
Thank you for taking my call. I just have a general comment. I use the Boston Express to I'm retired now, and I use the Boston Express bus to go to Boston to take classes. And I really love the experience. And I know Rhode Island has a special program for seniors. And it seems to me, with New Hampshire getting grayer and grayer, that this would be a great service to expand to keep the seniors mobilized and involved in what's going on around them.
It's another one of those wide range of options, Carrie, that we've talked about. Not necessarily just what size is the bus, but who's on it.
Correct. Yes. We are graying as a state. And, you know, that's one of the things I know, for example, the Downeaster has a discount. They also have discounts for medical appointments. I mean, so there's a lot, you know, not only are we taking classes, but we're going to Boston for, you know, medical, other reasons. So, you know, looking at who is going there, it's not just commuters. It's a wide range of people who are wanting to get around the state in a different way using alternative modes.
Here's a post on our Facebook page from Marie, who writes, "The other challenge of working in New Hampshire is that there are a dearth of high-quality child care. So even if I got an elusive position, unless it was at Concord Hospital or St. Paul's School, I'd have limited options for my kids who are both under 4 years old." And Alan, I'm sure this is not unique to New Hampshire. That question of if you're a parent who commutes, is child care in the town where you work or where you live, and how do you decide what makes the most sense?
That's a great question, and it's one of the questions I was going to ask of the group. Across the country, most people live in a household with other workers, husband and wife teams working, and so many of the options we talk about are really constrained by the fact of where that other worker is and where that other worker works. I think that's a critical question that needs to be considered in the New Hampshire context.
And in particular, here's another comment from Jen, who wrote on our Facebook page that driving into Boston, she says, is such a nightmare. I rarely go. I can't imagine driving that every day, even in good weather. Once the snow hits, no way. And that is a huge factor, mm-hmm. Dennis, we, in particular here in this part of the country, we had a monster of a winter last year, and there were a lot of people, even with relatively short commutes, who said, I'm staying home and I'm going to do my work there.
Right. Well, again, that's another, we've been talking about the telecommuting option and the need to improve the telecommunications infrastructure in the state. We seem to have a little difficulty, you know, finishing up that last couple of miles of broadband, you know, no matter where it is, whether it's in Mason or whether it's up in the Upper Valley or even in the northern part of the state. Those last miles, I guess, are always the hardest to finish.
Well, as we wrap up the hour, Alan Pizarski, I've been told that there's some new census data that's going to be taking a look at some of how we commute and whether it's been changing or not. That's coming out later this week. So I'll just ask you, what questions are going to be on your mind as you start to look at the latest rounds of data about our commutes and the way that we move and work?
Super question. The first one, of course, I'll look at travel times to see where they're trending. The second one, I always look at the number of households without a vehicle, percentage of households without vehicles, and whether that where that's trending, particularly among minorities. And then everybody looks at the modal shares to see what percent is by single-occupant vehicle, 1% by transit. It's the Dow Jones average of our business, and so people watch that very closely. Is transit up 0.5% or down 0.5%? Those are the critical questions. Then the tougher one is to look at flows and to find out whether there's really shifts, for instance, in the people. I'll be looking to see if the people who leave their home county continues to increase.
Carrie Deers, I'll ask you briefly, what are the questions that you're going to be looking at going forward, especially in southern New Hampshire, as we talk about commutes and traveling?
Well, I think the demographics question, you know, the 20-somethings that we want to have come to the state, how are they going to get around? And a lot of them don't want to have a car. So can we provide those options for them?
And Dennis DeLay, the question's on your mind.
Well, as far as if the Boston economy continues to do well, we can expect more people leaving New Hampshire and going to jobs down there. So actually, I'll be watching what happens in the greater Boston area.
So much to keep track of. Thank you all for being with us today. Carrie Deers, great to talk with you.
Thanks for having me.
That's Carrie Deers, Executive Director of the Nashua Regional Planning Commission, which serves 13 communities in southern New Hampshire. Dennis DeLay, great to talk with you as well.
Thanks for having me again.
Dennis DeLay, economist at New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies and forecast manager for New Hampshire at the New England Economic Partnership. And Alan Pizarski, great to have you.
Great pleasure to join you.
Alan Pizarski, an independent researcher and analyst of travel behavior who's authored the Commuting in America series since the 1980s. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. Our engineer today is Ross Boyd. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producer is Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. And I'm Brady Carlson, in for Laura Canoy.